Greetings, Scottish potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I am Gray Drake, and you are listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, that is one of the best introductions I've ever heard anyone ever do on this show, ever.
You're welcome.
In 265 episodes, that is this 266th episode is the best one. Thank
Yay!
You, Gray Drake.
I am so happy to do that for you, Kevin Carr, because I love you.
We love you too. We've had Gray on before. We're having her on again. We'll get to her. We remind everybody where she's from. But first, let's talk a little bit about where you can get us in case you're just listening to this somewhere. If you're like sitting, like if somebody's got on their boombox on the New York subway and you can hear, wow, what's that amazing podcast? Then you can find out. So you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network. And we pop right up a whole bunch of our shows. We got a whole bunch of shows that we got a new show, Operation Nikita, which is our podcast about the series Nikita, if you're a big fan of that. And you can go to facebook.com/FGATM to like us, just because that's the way we are. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, and leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. What's interesting, and when I mentioned the iTunes thing, I have to do a little bit of bragging thanks to Meryl Barr, one of our other hosts, who pointed out and found that the Fat Guys Network is now in the top 100 iTunes podcast about movies in Ireland.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know why, but, you know, hey, Aaron Gobrales, that's what I have to say.
It is because they are smart and drunk.
That's right. At least I'm Irish. This next one's going to, like, make your head spin because we're, like, top three. We're, like, the third highest rated podcast for movies in Kenya.
Wow.
How many?
Wow, that is an interesting.
Maybe I mean, six? I don't know.
Kenyan movie podcast. I would love to listen to that, honestly.
Well, but I mean, it's just apparently people in Kenya love it. I don't know why. I mean, it's great. I'm Irish. Not that everyone's like, oh, Kevin Carr. I must listen to that because he must be Irish with that name.
I feel like every movie review podcast in Kenya would just give every movie about running an A+.
Because it has nothing to do with running. I don't run at all.
Yeah, no, you are. This is genuine. This is a genuine triumph. We love you, Ireland.
Wow. Ireland and Kenya, that's right. Now the world is next.
world domination.
So it's sort of like I have my website where I publish my reviews, which is 7mpictures.com. We do very well in United Arab Emirates for some reason. I don't know. I always thought it was because there's like military bases there and that it just happens to get we get a good solid traffic. We get stuff like, it's amazing the internet where people find us from.
Maybe it's because you hated Sex in the City 2 and you love burkas.
Maybe I should put that on my profile. And for the record, I didn't hate Sex in the City 2. I just didn't like it.
No, don't say that. You're going to drop in the ranks. Stop it.
Oh,
shut up.
I love burkas.
Yes, burkas. Woo, sexy. What are they wearing underneath them? We don't know.
It's like a kilt. Anyways, Gray, tell us who you are, where we can find you, and that sort of thing.
Yes, I'm Gray Drake, and I host the Popcorn Mafia podcast, and I also do weekly movie reviews in written form. Yes, I can write. At movies.com every day of every week of every year. And then
you
I
do
also
a movie
do
a day?
Movie reviews over on CNN as well.
That's right. And that's on, is it Saturday, sometimes Saturday afternoon?
It's Saturdays at 11:40 Pacific. That would be 2:40 Eastern. I'm not great with time zones, but then you can look at me and my hair and which fabulous necklace I'm wearing this week.
That's what I love about your spots is because you go on CNN, and I don't care what political spectrum you go on, whether you're CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, everybody on, you know, all the networks. They're all stuffy people with this, you know, Ron Burgundy hair and suits.
Yeah, and I try to go as far from that as possible.
And then they cut to you, pink, you know, faux ox. You're like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, wow, that's awesome. Because you don't know what you're watching at that point.
I try to liven things up over there. They seem to let me run free for the most part. So I love them.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I knew Greg before Greg was doing that, and so it's so great to see. I'm glad that you're really taking off with some movie review stuff and you're now a bona fide critic and everything.
I know, right? I've got like actual credentials now. Thank you. It's been amazing. It's such a great job to have. We're so fortunate. And
yeah,
it's really like this is a dream come true because I just got done talking to Charlize Theron, who didn't want to stop talking about my hair. And I'm like, Charlize, this is great, and I'm really flattered, but I can't put any of this on Fandango. So let's move on.
That's pretty awesome, because she comes with the fashion world. So, I mean, she knows fashion.
I know, and God, what a gorgeous woman up close. Good lordy, I wanted to put my mouth on her face.
Wow.
I just loved her.
I want to do that, too. That's why I'm not allowed to go on those junkets anymore.
We keep you away.
We like to refer to that as the Halle Berry incident from several years ago.
Oh, poor girl.
I know. Anyways, should we talk about our first movie?
I suppose.
Yes. This is Chernobyl Diaries, and in this film, a group of 20-somethings take an extreme tourism trip to ground zero of Chernobyl and face horrifying events.
Like bread lines.
Yes.
So I know I said we're going to Moscow.
Yeah.
You guys ever heard of Chernobyl?
Yeah.
That's where the nuclear disaster happened.
Yes. Have you heard of extreme tourism?
You're incredible.
Who's coming with Paul to Chernobyl? This place was abandoned overnight. They had no time to take anything. Factories, schools, stores, apartments, everything's still there.
Reactor number 4, where the disaster happened.
Is it safe?
I have Geiger counted. It'll let us know if the radiation levels are high.
They're following us.
Not following us. They're hunting us.
Now, I didn't see it. You didn't see it. Are they screening it even in L.A.? Because they're not screening anything here in Ohio.
You know, they're not screening it. I have to sneak into the premiere to get to go see it. And the only way that is ever possible for me to sneak into a premiere is if my editors, you know, grease some palms. So I'm bribing people to see this movie so that way I can talk about it on the radio on Thursday and Friday of this week.
You may want to wear a hat, because I don't think it's easy for you to sneak in anywhere.
It's very true, actually. And I like this genre of picture. I love horror found footage. It just, you know, Blair Witch imprinted on me.
But see, this isn't actually found footage.
It's not. I thought it was.
I thought it was it's found footage style. Because if you watch the trailers, it doesn't look like somebody's videotaping the whole thing.
Oh, okay. I was wrong. Well, whatever. I like horror movies, and Russians are okay. How about that?
And Kenyans and Irish. They're also awesome. My favorite part of the trailer is when they're like, did you ever hear about this Chernobyl thing? And they're like, yeah. it reminds me of like the whole, who's Paul McCartney? Who's this guy?
Right.
And the Titanic was real? What?
I know. It's actually one of the few gifts of aging that you get to be treated to the ignorance of younger people. Yes. It's beautiful. The songs that come out, you know, I'm like, oh, it's a really good sample. And they're like, sample? You know, whatever Ray-Ban wearing, you know, hat, just member of the hipster class that's standing next to me is like, oh, it's a sample?
That was before my time? Yeah, so I don't know. This one actually looks kind of interesting. I get tired of the found footage, just the trappings of the genre. I don't mind the style, like the verite style, the cinema verite style that's sort of adapted to that, but I like the fact that this doesn't look necessarily like it's specifically found footage. But
That's good. Well, I've only seen the trailer once, and it was a long time ago, and I've tried to ignore it. So I'm actually interested to see it because everything in Russia seems terrifying to me.
Okay.
So I think it'll work.
Cool. All right. Well, we got to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk Men in Black 3. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. I kind of cut you off there before the break, but I wanted to make sure you got to say everything you wanted to about Chernobyl Diaries.
That's pretty much it. I've been to Eastern Europe, and it scared the crap out of me the entire time. So really? I am just willing to go to this film, which is pretty, you know, it's close enough to Eastern Europe for my American geography.
Why was it so scary? Is it just because the possibility of crime is there? Or
yeah,
what?
Well, first and foremost, the people where I was in Romania, And the people, the culture is not openly friendly. They're very serious and they keep to themselves until you get to know them in a way, you know, you introduce yourself or start a conversation, and then they're actually really funny and normal, like, you know, just very similar to us as Americans.
You just have to break the ice kind of thing. Is that what it is?
Right. You do, but generally they keep to themselves. But what that means is you generally walk down the street and it's not very welcoming. It still kind of has the feelings of that. You know, just all that old school, like, when the wall was up kind of thing going on. Well,
I mean, historically, even though it's been a while since communism fell, there is that sort of culturally you keep to yourself. Did you walk around going, hey, I'm an American. How you doing? American here.
I didn't have to. My pink hair said it all for me. And the thing, you know, the other thing is, too, is that I've seen so many movies that I was convinced that if I didn't stay with my group of journalists, that I would end up the star of Hostel 3.
Oh, wait, that's right, because didn't you go there for, like, the junket for Ghost Rider or something
like that? It wasn't Ghost Rider. It was at the studios where they shot Ghost Rider, so I was in all those sets, which are amazing. And it was for, a Wolfman movie. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was very cool and scary, and it was around Halloween, and it was awesome, and the makeup artist gave me wolf wounds, and I put them on Facebook, and I scared my mom.
She's like, oh my gosh, look what happened. There was a dog outside my apartment.
it was pretty awesome. But anyway, so I think that this movie just has a lot of built-in horror to it, so I'm in.
Yeah, well, because with everything from Hostel to Borat, you've got a very unfavorable view of the former Eastern Bloc.
Of course.
I think it terrifies people, and I think, I mean, rightfully so. I mean, even if you take a movie like The Whistleblower, which focuses on the human trafficking element that happens sometimes.
Well, yeah, and it's, oh God, it's so scary. And those people, you know, it's anytime you make generalizations about a culture, you end up sounding like a moron, you know. But I think that, I will refrain is what I'm...
We don't want to get any more racist than we already have.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like the Popcorn Mafia has enough of that. Fat Guys is way classier than my show. So I'll just keep it there. But it's not a good sign that they're not screening it.
No, it's not. But you know, here's the thing. They haven't screened, in terms of like found footage movies, I think they screened Project X, but I kind of removed that from the found footage thing because that was not a horror film. You know, in terms of these horror films, they don't screen. They don't screen Paranormal Activities. They didn't screen Devil Inside.
They did screen Chronicle though, just because it's so good.
Well, we can disagree on that. But
we do disagree. That's the first time I wanted to maybe gently smack you on your cheek a little bit.
I hated Chronicle, but I do recognize that a lot of people liked it. But it also falls in a. I think even though it's found footage, it's not found footage horror. It's a little bit more. It's still sort of teen centric, but it's not. It's very teen centric, but it's not. It's a different movie, and I can see why they wouldn't. But I think at this point they don't screen Paranormal Activity or like The Devil Inside and stuff like that. I'm gonna have to catch it at midnight on Thursday, so we'll see. Anyways, I don't know. Might be okay. Who knows?
Fingers crossed.
I've been wrong before.
No.
Let's move on to Men in Black 3, in which Agent J must travel in time to 1969 to save Agent K from being murdered by an alien from the future.
I promise you the secrets of the universe, nothing more.
So there's some secrets out there that the universe don't know about?
K!
There is no K. He's been dead for over 40 years.
What?
Somehow history has been rewritten. There has to be a reason this is happening, and K seems to be at the center of it.
You're gonna send me back to 1969.
Hey, man, how old are you?
29.
Oof. You have some city miles on you.
First off, what?
This movie's awesome.
You loved it?
I loved it.
See, not me.
Really?
Tell me why you loved it.
What is wrong with you?
I'm an idiot, I guess.
No, you just, God, you're just angry. You're an angry man, I've decided.
I'm a grumpy old man.
You're furious with the world. the second Men in Black, I went back and rewatched all these. Mm-hmm. And the first one is as great as I remember, and the second one was as bad as I remember, maybe even worse.
Okay.
And this one, I think, has let enough time lapse that they have something interesting to say about the characters. Now, I'm not going to say that it's the best movie of the summer, because it definitely isn't. However, with the element of time travel and Josh Brolin's amazing transformation...
Josh Brolin is awesome in this movie.
He is so good. I'm glad we can agree on something.
Yeah. No, I think he was fantastic in the movie. And I mean, there's also, like, Bill Hader has a part in there, and he's very funny in that part.
He's great, and he's really funny, and also that Michael, what's his name, fancy actor.
Yeah, from who plays the one guy in the coat. I don't know how else to describe it if somebody hasn't seen the movie, you know, I mean, because the audience will be completely lost.
Yeah, Michael Stuhlbarg, who was in that Coen Brothers movie.
A Simple Man?
I always get it confused with...
A Serious Man. It's A Serious Man.
I always get it confused with the... Oh, God, I just don't know.
You're thinking of A Simple Plan.
No,
There's A Single Man and A Serious Man.
A single man and Serious Man, I get confused. It is A Serious Man, you're right.
Serious Man is the Coen Brothers one.
He's great. He's genius. He was also in the Hugo movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this dude, and he's a stage actor, and I think that he is really a standout in the movie. Because it's the time travel that makes it fun for me. I thought it also had, like, some edgy civil rights humor in it that really surprised me, and I thought that Will Smith was just every bit as charming as he's always been.
Okay. See, I think that's what it hinges on. There are two giant sticking points I had, even just going into the movie, and I never got past them, even in the film itself, is I'm so tired of Will Smith. He was the 90s. He was 90s and then into the 2000s. And then he kind of disappeared for a while.
Hey, listen, do we have you to blame for him not making movies for a while? Is he hiding from you?
He might be. He might be terrified because, boy, did I tear him apart for 7 pounds. And Hancock. I didn't like Hancock, but I don't blame Will Smith for Hancock. I blame Peter Berg for Hancock.
I blame anybody who took it from an R to a PG-13.
See, the thing is, I'm just tired of his shtick. I'm just tired of it. And I think it has more to do with his son, because his son tries to do his shtick and just is terrible at it. And so I'm just irritated at just that whole sort of general, oh, hey, cool, that whole thing that he does. And so there was that. I'm tired of Will Smith.
That's the worst Will Smith impersonation ever.
Are you kidding me? I'm on retainer from The Tonight Show to do Will Smith. I'm going to show up dressed as Will Smith.
You're the worst.
Just the fattest Will Smith that ever walked the planet. But I did like that. And then the time travel, I couldn't get past the fact that as I'm watching this, I'm going, this is the Santa Claus 3. This is Shrek the Third. Heck, this is like Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time, the direct-to-DVD video, that thing. This is also the Austin Powers, the Spy That Shagged Me. So it had all these...
How dare you compare these two movies? They're not even close to being the same.
But the whole idea, they have to go back to 1969, and he's got to do this, and it's all to prevent something. It just seems to me that that's sort of like the go-to position for a third movie, is to say,
Okay, well, now that you bring that up, I'll definitely give you that point, and I will officially say now, because I just realized it, I'm a sucker for that.
And that's cool. And that's the thing. I mean, I think if you like Will Smith, like my wife loves Will Smith. She thinks he's hilarious. She'll watch anything he's in. And that's great. I just, I'm kind of getting tired of him. And it feels like it's stuck in the 90s. Like he uses the term, I'm going to pimp slap the shiznit out of you.
Oh, that was bad. That was not good.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like, wow, does anyone say that now?
No. They didn't even say it back then, like 5 years ago when that was supposedly something that people said.
When that was the shiznit.
Well, and I have to admit, I will also admit to you, just because we're such good friends and I do respect you so much, even though you're so wrong on this, is that I am prejudiced.
Okay.
Because I am officially a lifelong Will Smith lover. And that, not lover, but lover.
Do you have a card?
I am. It's actually currently being printed by Vistaprint.com.
Oh.
Because I interviewed him, and I feel like we're best friends now.
Of course. Well, that's what they do. That's what celebrities do.
Oh, that's what smart celebrities do. Because guess who I hate?
I don't know. You know what? You can tell me at the end after the break.
Done.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment where Gray can swear.
Infamous middle friggin' segment.
Wow, you even like censored yourself on that.
Yeah, I know, right? I was trying to subvert your expectations. I'm trying to keep things fresh in our relationship.
Aw, that's so sweet. It's just unique and different. Anyways, who do you hate? What celebrity do you hate?
Tommy Lee motherfucking Jones.
Was he an ass in the junket or
something? Oh my God, he was the worst.
Or was he just getting into his grumpy old man character?
You know what? I actually asked my good friend of the Popcorn Mafia, Mr. Alonzo Duraldi. Alonzo, I said, over a hamburger, who is the worst interview you've ever had in your long and prolific career? Yeah. He said, without even waiting a beat, he said Tommy Lee Jones.
Really?
Now, apparently, this dude hates doing anything involving like press or promotion so much that he makes people squirm for even participating in it. Like, Alonzo was at a film festival where they were honoring him. They were honoring Tommy Lee Jones, and he was still a jerk to everyone. Wow. Like on stage in Q&As and stuff. And so I thought I could go in there and win him over.
Oh, you tried too hard.
Well, I didn't. I actually didn't try too hard because I was like, in the end, I could care less. I just won't put him in my video.
You leave, you go, fuck you, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wanted to. I actually tried to get him to admit that he hated junkets, but underneath his gruff exterior, he really was a pussycat. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I'm sorry, I just don't think in these terms. I don't know how to answer that.
He goes yes to one, no to two.
Well, yeah, it's like that's his friggin', it's his go-to. He's like a robot. It was really horrible. And he's made people cry. All you have to do are say those three dreaded words to any movie entertainment journalist, and they'll, like, 9 times out of 10 go, oh, my God, and tell you the worst story about him.
Well, what does he do? Does he, like, punch you in the face, or is he just kind of just annoying?
He doesn't give good answers. He doesn't play along. Because, as you know, half of doing an interview is the willingness of the person being interviewed to play with you.
Yeah.
So sometimes you ask a question that's not really a question, but someone, it makes them think of something and they answer it. And then you develop a rapport like a normal conversation.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do that. He refuses, in fact. And the only thing that I came out of a 5-minute interview with that I could use was me making him laugh.
Okay.
I actually made him frigging laugh, and it was because I made fun of myself. And that's when he laughed. And so I retaliated by making him the butt of a joke in the Men in Black video that is on Fandango.com.
Oh, okay. Is it on there now? Can I go up and look at it and see what
you're talking about? Currently, I just checked and it's not on there, but it will be within the next couple of days, so...
Okay, cool. We'll definitely have to check that out. See, here's the thing. If you and I'm not surprised about this because you see him in movies and he acts, and that's cool. He does his shtick. But if you watch him, and if you ever watch he's currently doing an ad for. There's an ad that's airing. I think it's either for like health insurance or senior health insurance, or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And he just looks really uncomfortable. And he used to do the Will Rogers Institute thing.
Yep.
And if you watch the presentation of that, he's twitching and fidgeting through the entire thing. And you're like, you're there for like, and he's just kind of like, he's like, well, give to the World Will Rogers Institute if you really fucking want to. And I don't give a shit. Somebody go get me my coffee. Kind of how he delivers a line. He just looks so annoyed with the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's who he is. And I think that maybe he is somehow uncomfortable in his own skin, so that's why he's such a good actor and he's so bad in person, it's awkward, whatever it is, I'm obsessed with how horrible he is. Like, I can't stop talking about it because it's really the worst experience I've had interviewing
someone.
And
you want to interview him again, you want to break him down again, don't you?
You know, I almost want to just do an interview where I sit and stare at him.
That would be awesome. That would be the best interview to stare at each other because he won't answer. He won't respond.
Yeah, no, he won't. We will play a staring game with each other. And I kind of, that's sort of the approach I want to take next time because I tried to level with him.
Uh-huh.
And watching the raw footage is so uncomfortable.
Is it? You should do it like that. Like that scene in Magnolia where Tom Cruise has that interview with the woman, and he doesn't say anything.
Exactly. Yes.
I like, and I could just see at the end of Tommy Lee Jones going, "I gave you my 20 minutes, and you're done."
Right. I want a Magnolia Tommy Lee Jones.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that's what's gonna happen.
Did you try to kiss him?
I should have been like, this has gone so well, I'm sure you're going to be into this. And then
you
just
should.
Be
you
like...
Just like start humping his leg. And be like, what, could it get any worse? No.
Nope. Yeah. Absolutely not. I was really grateful for how wonderful everyone else was at the junket. like Josh Brolin was, he offered to hold my purse. It was great. It was a really fun time. So
that's great. But see, Will Smith, did you try to kiss Will Smith and get... Did you get pimp slap?
If I had tried to kiss Will Smith, our interview went so great, I think he would have been into it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Because, No kidding. I left the interview, right? I'm walking out. He's like, thanks a lot, Gray. Gray Drake! He yelled my name. He Steve Holted me.
Yeah.
Okay? And I turned around and I was like, Will Smith! And I left. And I was like, holy shit. Like, that was crazy what just happened.
See, but that's a good celebrity. That's how Julia Roberts has a career. Because I remember there was a part where she was in a downturn in her career and it was a slump. And I was watching some behind the scenes thing. Or no, it may have been because she was kind of in a slump until she won the Oscar for Aaron
right.
Brockovich. Mm-hmm. I think she was in the late 90s were not good to her.
Right.
Necessarily. And I saw her then do an interview and maybe she won the Golden Globe or whatever. And I saw her handling the press, and I'm like, oh, that's why that's what got her through her career. Because she was able, she knew all the people by name, and she was friendly with them and smiled and eye contact. And I'm like, well, you do that, you're going to get good stuff written about you. People don't want to make you look like a dick on, they don't want to bust your image if you treat them nice.
True, very true. And I've seen more and more people that are super smart in dealing with the press versus the people who aren't, and how different I feel about them and what information I put out about them. It's really a struggle to be unbiased, and then hashtag white people problems.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, that's why I haven't done very many interviews recently, and it's always uncomfortable when it's somebody. Actually, we had this question last week on the show. How do you deal with, or a couple weeks ago on the show, you know, how do you deal with somebody whose movie you hated, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
And it does get comfortable, especially if the subject asks what you thought and you didn't like. I mean, it's one thing, like, I interviewed, the most recent interview I did was with Drew Goddard and Kristen Connolly for Cabin in the Woods. And I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. So it made it very easy to talk about.
Of course, yeah, because you're just fanboying out on it.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this was really cool and I appreciated this. But if I can't imagine what would happen if I was, like, interviewing somebody for something awful. Like, if I was interviewing, like, Jennifer Lopez for What to Expect When You're
Anything.
Anything that she's ever done in the history of the planet. But yeah, I mean, so it is hard because there is a line. There's a difference between critic and journalist who's there to write promotional pieces and you know, the interviews you do on Fandango that show up on Fandango, for example, the purpose of those are not to critically analyze the film.
No, not even close. It's promotion.
The purpose, yeah, it's promotion, and that's why they do it. And it's to make it benefits the site, it benefits the film, and that's what it is. And it's the same reason why Entertainment Weekly can, you know, do this 48-page spread about the latest big, huge movie, and then 2 weeks later when the movie comes out and they review it, they just shit all over it in their review.
They're separate worlds for sure. And that's I always go into something just figuring out, like, not even so much focusing on whether or not I like the movie, but really more just like, what about the movie was interesting enough that people want to listen to someone talk about it?
Yeah.
You know, so because I mean, I also, in the end, don't care so much about the movie as I do making stars do crazy things that they wouldn't normally do.
Oh,
like, you know, no big deal getting Thor to feel my bicep. Whatever.
Of course. Who wouldn't want that?
Whatever. You know, it's just another Thursday for Gray Drake. Why is my voice so high? I don't know.
What happened? Oh, you're flushed. Woo.
Oh, goodness. Oh, my stars.
Are you having the vapors? You have a case of
vapors.
So, yeah. Anyways, going back to Men in Black 3, it's one of those that I didn't hate the movie. You know, I felt the way I felt about it. It was, to me, it was very similar to Battleship, where I'm kind of like, not in the sense, it's a better movie, actually, than Battleship. But But when I saw Battleship, I'm like, when you said there'd be like, oh, there's crappy dialogue and terrible acting and a stupid story. I'm like, what did you expect? It's freaking Battleship starring Rihanna. Did you see the article on Vulture this week about the, it listed every single line she had in the movie?
That's awesome. She was pretty flat in it. I didn't think she was bad, but I didn't think it was her fault.
Oh, this is her delivering every dialogue. That's like everything she said was
okay.
Like,
I disagree with that also.
Well, like the scene where she's like, where they're in the boat, the little rubber raft that doesn't at all get damaged when the giant ship's sleeping over.
Exactly.
She goes, "What is that thing?" But I counted; it's 318 lines, 318 words of dialogue. People's reviews were longer than that.
Nah, that's funny. Well, critics are jerks. You can't review a movie like Battleship. Honestly, like, it's not about reviews. Like, that's it. You know what? This is my official advice for anybody considering seeing Battleship. Yeah. Now, it also applies to most summer films, okay? Mm-hmm. Number one, buy the biggest bucket of popcorn you can afford. Mm-hmm. Number two, deactivate your brain.
Yeah.
Number three, shut up. Just shut up. Shut up, watch the movie, eat food, and go home. That's it. Shut up. Like, that's why critics are so... It's stupid to review movies like this, because Battleship was... It had an awesome last 30 minutes, I thought. And if you could make it through the first hour and 40 minutes to see it, then it's fine. Like, it's, you know, I thought it was, you know, the beginning of the summer.
That's like going out on a date and saying, well, the conversation was really terrible, and the food was awful, and the movie was terrible, but I got laid. So,
hey, listen, be marriage happy. Happens based on what you just said, okay? Plenty of people, don't you judge other people in the world for their lifestyles, Kevin. No, I'm just kidding. I agree with that. I mean, I agree with that to some extent, but, you know, talking about the dialogue, it's like, but this is why critics are out of touch with the world.
But see, I don't think they are. I mean, look at Battleship. No, because Battleship's not a good... I mean, I'm not defending Battleship, but I'm like, you know, I gave it 2 out of 5 stars. And I said it in such a way because I was like... Because even the action, it takes 35 minutes before the aliens even show up. And I'm just like, so we have to sit through that. And it's terrible. And it's not... And like, when it starts out, you've got like Taylor Kitsch, and somehow he's like talking like Barry White through the whole thing at the beginning, but then his voice changes, but goes up. It could have been better. And I think that there's good action movies and there's bad action movies and there's good tempo. Like, The Avengers has lots of problems to it in terms of story, and there's stuff that doesn't quite make sense, but it's a fantastic movie from beginning to end. I didn't feel that way about Battleship, and that's why I was a little harsher on it. I don't think you can just say... To me, Check Your Brain at the Door is fine, but even if you check your brain at the door and you're just like, wow, this just is not, I mean, it's just not good. So.
Okay, I'll give you that point. Because it is our job to, you know, identify what's good and what's bad according to our opinion.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Yes, I mean, some stuff is not great. Okay. I still think, though, that with a movie like Battleship, it's like, How much did it make? 25, 30 million?
Yeah, 25 million in the States, yeah.
Okay, that's not great, but I wonder what the people's opinion of it is. We just don't, we have no way to quantify it. But with movies like this that are constantly panned by critics, like normal people, I'm using air quotes, generally always enjoy them. And, if the average moviegoer sees 5 movies a year, like, Battleship's not too bad. I mean, no, it wasn't as good as Avengers, but it wasn't that bad.
Well, but here I think the difference is that there are certain crowds that will flock to something. The Devil Inside, which got an F cinema score and was booed nationwide at the end of the
movie. It was a horrible ending.
made more money its first weekend than Battleship did. I think that sometimes a movie like Battleship, and I've talked to regular people, not just, no, it made like $30 million.
Hold on though, because all you have to also consider though, there are a lot of factors that go into that, because Devil Inside came out in the very beginning of January where nothing else was out, whereas this came out 2 weeks after Avengers. So Avengers took so much of their box office.
I don't think Avengers was in its third week. I think Avengers still
made
money.
$55 million in its third week.
That's awesome too, and that's because it's a good, exciting movie.
Yeah.
I think there are certain movies that are just like even John Carter, which I liked. I liked John Carter. However, I don't think it connects to a mainstream audience at all. It's an old, it's an archaic story. It seems derivative of other things. From somebody who doesn't know the history of it, they would be like, well, this is ripping off stuff, even though it's not, because it's the
original.
Yeah,
I know. I sigh that deep sigh, because I really like John Carter, and I'm so sad for Taylor Kitsch, because I don't want any of these things to reflect badly on him. I think he's a really good actor, and I'm excited for the Oliver Stone movie that he's going to be in, because I think people are going to be really pleased.
See, I don't think he's... I've never watched Friday Night Lights, so I'm not a bit, I hated the movie, so I didn't watch the series. But so I can't speak in terms of Friday Night Lights, but I don't think Kitsch is leading man big screen material.
And I described him.
I described him to somebody as a young, sexy Alan Alda. Because Alan Alda was a
get
TV
out of
star.
Here.
No, because he was a TV guy and he works on TV. You put him on in a movie and you know he can play the limited parts. Like he was like recently, if you look at stuff, he was in Tower Heist and he was in like Flash of Genius and he shows up and stuff and he's okay as like a, but he always is just Alan Alda. But he worked as Hawkeye on the small screen. I don't know. I think there are some people that work on the big screen and people that don't. And sometimes it's features. Sometimes it's just their presence. You go back to like Will Smith. Will Smith is, he could do both. You know, I mean, he was a TV star, but even then I think he's bigger than TV.
Yeah,
he had a show.
Yeah. I mean, he carried that entire show. It was like the show succeeded because of him specifically. Yeah. I agree that he's big. He's so big he has to be big screen. And this is what I hope. I hope that Taylor Kitsch has all the success in the world that he wants. So if that means going back to TV, then I hope he gets that, because I just think he's really good and I really like him. And I never thought that the movies were his fault. Okay. I don't blame
him for Battleship. I mean, again, I blame Peter Berg for Battleship. And I blame the fact that they said, hey, let's make, you know, this is different than doing Transformers or G.I. Joe, which are the other Hasbro's properties.
Just barely.
Transformers has a story. I mean, even though, arguably with what Michael Bay does to it and everything, but there is sort of this, there's at least a setup. There's alien robots, blah, blah, blah. And like G.I. Joe, well, they're this elite team, and say what you want to about the films. There's a story, but this is like making a Jenga, the movie, where it's this very simple strategy game, and then you just have to add on these weird things, and I don't know. Yeah,
But by the way, genius way of integrating the game into the movie.
I thought that was fine. I didn't
really
have a
good. I thought it was super, because it worked so well, and I kept waiting for it. And then when I saw the setup, I was like, "Oh my god, this is dope!" There are like just enough things in Battleship for me to be like, "Woo!" And I saw it in London.
Yeah.
And the Brits were so into it that they were literally clutching their head and writhing around. Like, it was
really. Are you sure there wasn't somebody like played some crazy, like, you know, like non-lethal weapon, test in the theater as people are rolling around bleeding out of their ears and stuff?
That
like
only
that.
British ears could hear, possibly.
Exactly.
Very possibly. Or they were mentally ill, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
I don't remember who I saw the movie with.
No, I think, come to think of it, it wasn't even London. No, but the Men in Black 3 is going to be number one this week.
Yeah, I think that'll happen, because even Avengers was $55 million last week.
Right, so that means that it'll be around 25 or 30.
And I think Will Smith I think there's enough people, but I don't think this is going to be a huge hit. I think it's going to be very front-loaded. Here's the other thing I didn't like about the movie. I love Jamie Clement. Is that how you say his name?
Who?
Jermaine Clement. Jermaine Clement. I think he's hilarious. I'm one of the few people on the planet who loved Gentleman's Broncos.
Yes, you are.
One of the few people who liked that movie. I thought he was brilliant in that film. I even thought he was okay.
He's always brilliant. That's the thing. He's fantastic.
Dinner for Schmucks. He was fantastic in Rio as the voice of the crazy cockatoo. But this movie, I was like... The villain was very forgettable, and any movie is
really. See, I thought he was fantastic as the villain.
He was so he did well with what he had, but he wasn't given much. I mean, the villain was so forgettable. The movie literally forgets about him for like 30 minutes, and then he shows up, and they're like, "Oh my god, yes, he's that guy's gonna do something." But it reminded me of the villain from like Lethal Weapon 3, where you said, "Who's the villain in Lethal Weapon 1?" Oh yeah, it was the old guy, Mr. Joshua, with Gary Busey, and you further on, and then you go, "Who's the bad guy in Lethal Weapon 3? And be like, not the Chinese. That was the fourth one. Not the South Africans. That was the second one. It was a guy with a mustache, and there were guns. Dang. And that's about all you remember from Lethal Weapon 3.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
So that's and I may be out of touch with everybody. Mm. I seem to, there's a lot of people who are saying this movie was a lot of fun for them, but I'm also hearing a lot of people saying, well, the second movie was so awful, this was better than that. And I'm like, I don't know if you can.
Yeah, no, man. It's Pirates of the Caribbean syndrome, man. This last one was so much better than the completely unintelligible third one people liked it better in comparison. But it has like a 63% on Rotten Tomatoes. So here's the thing. I think that more people are going to agree with me than you, but... But you're not completely out there. You know, like, I think that the movie will be a moderate success. I think it's going to be number one. And it will disappear because just next week, we've got Snow White and the Huntsman. And then we've got Prometheus. So it's going to be just a mere blip on the radar.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know whether it'll beat... It has a possibility of... Well, it's going to win the weekend this week. And... Depending on how well it does this weekend, it might outdo Snow White and the Huntsman. I don't know how well that's going to do either.
I don't know either, because I don't think people really know what it is. And let me assure you, dear listeners.
Have you seen it already?
I have. And although I don't think I'm allowed to technically say anything about it, what I will tell you...
That's okay. Nobody listens to this show
anyway. Ah, yes, they do in Kenya, and they
that's
do
right,
in
Kenya
Ireland.
That's right, Kenya and Ireland.
And soon, Russia. Yes. and it is incredibly violent. Mm. And that's what I really liked about it. Okay. it was just the right mix of everything. It was very intense, and I was surprised at the battles and all the action in it and how well Kristen Stewart did in it.
But it's PG-13, right?
Yeah, no. So it's not like it's not like Piranha 3D, you know, gore, but it's definitely like intense. Okay. So I enjoyed it for that reason.
Okay. And Kristen Stewart was okay. Because that's the thing, I think that is, to me, from what I've heard just average people say, and you can talk, because I know people that are critics, and I know a lot of critics, and I know a lot of journalists, but I also know a lot of regular people. And this is
weird.
Like,
what's that like?
I know, isn't it strange? Going back to the Battleship thing, I hear the critics saying, well, that's stupid. It was based on the game Battleship. I'm hearing the exact same thing from normal people.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad. I mean, that disproves my point that critics are out of touch, which makes me feel better.
But sometimes they're not. I mean, sometimes critics are wildly out of touch, and they love. And
which
and
is why everybody hates the Oscars.
Yes. But, like critics love the artist and nobody else did. But. The same thing I've heard from multiple people, critics and regular people alike, Snow White and the Huntsman, people say, in what world is Charlize Theron less beautiful than Kristen Stewart?
Funny. It depends on what their demo is for who's going to see the movie. And my guess is that it's Twilight fans.
Yeah.
And it's mostly kids. I mean, I think mostly teens are going to see the film. I think that I can't decide what their demo is, if they're going for men, because it just seems like a weird movie for guys to choose. But she's good in the movie because she actually pulls off that kind of character very well. I'm not convinced she's ever acted a day in her life.
I think her earlier stuff, I've said this about Kristen Stewart before, is I think her earlier stuff, if you look at like the pre-Twilight stuff, she shows a lot of promise and she did a lot of range. And some of the stuff, she kind of falls in the same tropes. And then what happened is Catherine Hardwicke didn't direct her out of any of her old tics.
Mm.
And then she just is like, then she just clung to them. And so when she got new director, she's like, well, this is Bella. And this is the way she's going to act. And Bella is like the worst role for a woman or anybody to play. Woman, it doesn't matter. Because it's a blank slate. It is basically, it's like, give me the blank slate. Give me the arms and the legs and the hair that the viewer can then project themselves onto.
Right.
And that's what Bella is all about.
Yeah, I can dig that.
So
I'm with you. And I think she does a little bit of that in this movie, but it worked for me. And I don't normally, I'm normally pretty hard on her as a critic, so... Yeah, and also weirdly, my best interview of the day. Who knew?
She does a good interview. I did a roundtable thing with her years ago, like when she did like The Messengers well before Twilight. She was really cool.
Wow.
And then Twilight happened, and I'm like, and then she like kind of looked like got into that heroin chic look, and you're just like, I don't know what you're planning on doing with anything in your life.
I love how we sound like a million years old.
I'm allowed to. I can be grumpy old man.
You wear it well, Kevin Carr.
So the official grade, my official grade for Men in Black 3 is it kind of sucks. It's right there on the middle. And that's the thing. I mean, it could be it all depends on if you can take Will Smith.
I'm going to interrupt you. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I'm just saying if you like Will Smith, and that's my lead into you. Cause
okay, good, because I like Will Smith, and Kevin is totally wrong. So this is a see it for sure. Because this is fun. It's a fun movie. And here's the thing. Drew McWeeny over at HitFix wrote this great, great article about the Avengers and why it's so good. Mm. And you should Google it because it's a lot about just how the Avengers is so positive. And it's like stirring our spirits in a time where we really need that as a world. And so I find that any movie that kind of is similar to that in that respect, that it's like kind of positive and it's just like a fun, like genuinely good-hearted thing.
You say that about the Hannah Montana movie that came out.
Absolutely. I would never say anything bad about Hannah Montana because I've never seen it, and I know that a million little girls would claw my eyes out if they knew and I didn't like it. But I mean, obviously that Miley Cyrus is doing something right, right? Yeah. What with her?
Now she's doing somebody else, but yeah.
Now she's doing
somebody put a post on Facebook where they're like, she's talking about having sex and stuff. Which is like, it's her trying to like make herself edgy again because her days at Disney are over, as they should be because she's 18. And
yeah.
You don't need to be making Disney. Then you become the mom or the dad and you go back to the network like David DeLuise or something like that. But yeah, so she's doing the Hillary Duff thing. Now she's not doing the Lindsay Lohan thing.
Thank God.
Because nobody wants that.
With her 45-year-old smoker's voice. Gosh, horrible to listen to. But, I mean, so Men in Black falls into that category. They're just in Moonrise Kingdom. Same thing, like, oh, these movies make me feel so good, and I miss that. So I liked it. I say, see it, see it, see it.
Okay. You liked, but you like, so it's a, is it a rocks or kind of rocks in the Fat Guys?
It totally rocks. I love it.
Okay, we'll do that. That's cool. We're not talking about Moonrise Kingdom. If you want to throw in and give something about Moonrise Kingdom, you can. I haven't seen it yet. So
Moonrise Kingdom is Wes Anderson's latest movie, and this is the dude who did Rushmore and Fantastic Mr. Fox and Bottle Rocket and Royal Tenenbaums. And his movies are all, they all have very, a very similar tone. They all look very similar. So here's the thing. If you don't like any of his other movies, you're not going to like this one. But you are much more likely to, I think, because this is a movie that stars mostly kids and is about like how precocious they are when they pretend to be Romeo and Juliet and they go on adventures and they're incredibly violent and they do all kinds of cool stuff in 1965 Rhode Island. So I love the movie because when it stars mostly kids, the vibe of his movies and the tone of his writing becomes appropriate, like even more appropriate than it normally is. Because I'm a fan, but I think Moonrise Kingdom takes it to like a whole new level.
What I mean, would you compare it to like Fantastic Mr. Fox? Because that, at its heart, is a kid's movie.
Yeah, it would. I mean, it's similar in the respect that there are people who believe very strongly about their goal and what they're trying to achieve, and they will engage in violence to get it. Okay. And that's what I like, is that it's so weird because these movies are so sweet, and they're like this little love letter to, you know, whatever, childhood or love or whatever it is, a love letter to love. That was profound. But they really are. They treat these topics with such, you know, with such tenderness and reverence, yet there are such shocking acts in it, generally violent ones, that you're like, oh my God, it's crazy. I'm a huge fan of that. I love it because love is violent for Grey Drake. And awesome. Yeah.
Good to know. And so, put that on your Facebook profile. Grey Drake is not a relationship. Love is violent. Here's my cell phone.
Yeah, right. Call me. But so I thought Moonrise Kingdom could be my favorite film of his of all time. And that's really saying something, because I love Rushmore and Royal Tenenbaums so much. And yeah, Moonrise Kingdom just made me feel like he had wrapped my shoulders in a cashmere blanket and given me a nice cup of tea.
Oh, how sweet. That's awesome.
Love, love.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this one, I'm looking forward to this. I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan, so we'll go from there. Let's talk real quickly box office. We talked about last week. We're going to burn through this real quick because we already kind of went into this. Avengers won $55 million, Battleship with $25 million, and then going on down from there. The Dictator didn't do very well, although oddly enough is doing better overseas.
Oddly enough. No, it's all about Death to the West. Of course it's doing great overseas. Are you listening, yeah, Kenya?
Nice. And Ireland?
Yeah.
Wait, Ireland's like, we're fighting ourselves at this point. Anyways, Nick, this week, do you have a number? Do you want to throw out a number there for Men in Black?
Oh, I don't think it's going to overperform, but I definitely think it'll do 30. It'll do Dark Shadows numbers.
I think it'll crack into the 30s, I think. I mean, I think just with the three, because part of the thing that if you compare like John Carter and not John Carter, Battleship and Dark Shadows did not have the 3D bump, and that's becoming very critical to movies nowadays. Although there's a big controversy about isn't the Sony Pictures is not wanting to pay for the glasses, and like AMC or one of the big chains doesn't. They're having a fight over who pays for the glasses.
Hilarious.
You know, which is ridiculous.
It sounds like my mom and me in high school when I wanted a pair of Ray-Bans.
So we'll see. I mean, I think it's, you know, last 3 weeks I've said 30 to 50 million last 2 weeks I said 30 to 50 million for Dark Shadows, 30 to 50 million for Battleship. I was above for those. I'm going to use that same, that same spread for Men in Black, so 30 to 50 million. I don't think it's not going to be like a $70 million weekend.
No.
Chernobyl Diaries, I think, is going to make like 10 or 15.
Sure, yeah. It'll do fine.
Is it R-rated? If it's rated R, I think it's going to be tough. R-rated movies don't do well in the summer.
That's interesting. I'm trying to look it up right now so I can... Yeah, it is R, actually. Whoops.
Yeah. Yeah, and
ooh, that means it'll probably be pretty dope, though.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, you know, like Prometheus, I'm sure will do okay. I'm talking about like these middling or these smaller R-rated movies. May and June are terrible times to release R-rated minor horror movies. I mean, it killed Hostel 2. Whereas I think if Hostel 2 had come out in January, like the first one did, it would have been a bigger hit, and it just disappeared in the summer of 2007.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be tough there. Anything else you want to talk about? I mean, we've rambled on about Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith.
I'm just sitting here staring at the palm of my hand, and I'm feeling like it's time for the Fat Guy 5.
That's right, Fat Guy 5. This is in honor of Men in Black 3. And it is five 90s movies. And I say 90s movies, and some of these are series that went through the 90s. Five 90s movies that deserve a sequel. The first one I'm going to take, and that's True Lies, which is James Cameron, is his middle film. And it was before he did movies like Titanic and Avatar, which made $87 billion.
In one day.
In one day in the U.S. alone. So this is back when he was doing small independent art films. So it was a neat little spy movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'd love to see a sequel to this just because I personally want to see James Cameron just kind of go back to the standard action film, because he went Titanic and then he like obsessed about Titanic for like 15 years. I guess 10 years. And then he went to Avatar, and now he's talking about making like 8 other movies, and they're going to be in the ocean and everything. And I'm like, why don't you just go back and make just a good old fashioned spy film for $70 or $80 million?
I don't know if he's going to, man. He's so into the ocean, man. Yeah. I don't think he's going to make normal movies from here on out. I think it's all going to be like IMAX BS.
Unless he has one that just completely tanks. I mean, like if Avatar 2, which is entirely possible, if Avatar 2 bombs, I mean, and if it comes out and it makes $150 million worldwide and that's it, there's going to be a rethinking of his projects from that point.
But I don't know. I think he gets one failure. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with old Jimmy C.
Yeah, yeah. He may just go back in the ocean. Anyways, you got the next one.
The next one that I want to see a sequel to is The Nightmare Before Christmas, because I think that Jack Skellington has a lot more damage to wreak upon holidays. So I'd also like to suggest a title, which is The Nightmare That Runs Simultaneously to My Easter Celebration.
That might be a little long to put on a, you know.
Shut up, Kevin.
On a marquee. Okay. Tell me more about this movie.
Love is pain.
I would love to see it. Yeah, because this is the thing. What would he do? Would he do Easter? I think it'd be more fun for Jack Skellington to do like Valentine's Day.
Of course. That's a great one. That's a perfect one. It's also like there's think of all the cute little bleeding hearts he would put everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And Johnny Depp's not allowed in the movie.
Oh, God. Yeah, let's just let Tim Burton produce it. And the thing about Nightmare Before Christmas is that, I mean, all of these movies, I'm glad that they don't have sequels, because that means that there's some sort of integrity left in Hollywood. And by integrity, I mean that their number crunchers don't think they could make enough money to justify making the film.
Yeah.
But having said that, I think The Nightmare Before Christmas was such a beautiful movie, and the songs were so good, and it's so easy to watch over and over again, that they should really mine this field deeper, you know? Like, keep going back.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that would be cool. The next one is The Rocketeer, which was a great superhero movie from... And actually, if you look at it in retrospect, there was a... Every 10 or 15 years, you get a big push of superhero movies. You had a big push of superhero movies in the late 70s, you know, and it was on television too, with like Wonder Woman and Spider-Man. And then you had the Batman or the Superman movie. And then about 10, 15 years later, you had the Batman movie. And then that spawned movies like that original Captain America, which is terrible, and The Punisher. But The Rocketeer came out in 1990, and it just recently had its like 20th anniversary release on Blu-ray. It's a neat little movie.
It holds up.
Yeah, and it actually holds up better than the other stuff from that era. It's not quite at the level that superhero movies are at now, but I'd love to see a Rocketeer movie. And give it to Joe Johnson. Let him direct a Rocketeer, because I think he can. He did great with Captain America.
I agree. I agree completely. And I also suggest that accompanying the purchase of every ticket is a jetpack.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be much better than blackjack chewing gum.
You're welcome, Hollywood, once again.
Awesome. The next one is... I'll take the next one, which is Independence Day.
Yes, I love this movie.
I loved Independence Day. I could even handle bringing Will Smith back for that. I think I could I could stomach his shtick a little bit.
He looks
better.
Exactly the same. Why not?
Do you want to know? You want to know a weird piece of trivia about Men in Black?
Yes.
Tommy Lee Jones, when he shot the first movie, was only 8 years older than Will Smith is now.
What?
Yeah.
God, man, black don't crack.
Well, I think he might have a little bit of hair dye in there too. He's in his 40s. He's got to be showing some salt and pepper in there.
It doesn't matter. He looks fantastic. He's in such good shape. I'm actually secretly in love with Will Smith.
I don't think there's any secret about this girl. You're like, I secretly love this man. I'm like, nope. You totally out there love
him. I outwardly love him. All right.
Independence Day. I'd love to see an Independence Day sequel. They were talking about it back in the late 90s. Never came to fruition. And then, you know, maybe they could do like Independence Day meets Anonymous. And Roland Emmerich can kind of do all of that and do a sequel at the same time where Shakespeare somehow is involved in defeating the aliens.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I just don't know what the storyline would be because we've seen so many alien movies and they've all ripped off Independence Day. Yeah. Including the Avengers a little bit.
But Independence Day kind of ripped off like everything else before, like War.
Right. It's just like I feel like when you're talking about movie history now, you can only go back a certain number of decades, and then you have to figure out what the tentpole films were of those decades, and then you can say that things have ripped those things off.
I think you're right. I think Independence Day was a game changer.
Yes.
And it influenced everything. It was the Star Wars of its day.
Right. 91, right?
No, it was 96.
What? It was that late?
Independence Day was 96, yeah. Well, no, because that was like...
Oh, that's right.
Like,
Jurassic Park was 90. Okay.
Going back to Will Smith, he had done Bad Boys like 95, and then he did Independence Day, and then like a year later he did Men in Black, and that's what solidified him as the big, huge box officer. Before that, he was just the Fresh Prince, and he was untested. I mean, Bad Boys did okay, but it wasn't until Independence Day that he really got his bump.
And Jurassic Park was 93, so I don't know what I'm thinking of. Nothing happened in 91. Stop Googling it, people who are listening. Stop Googling it, Ireland.
Nothing happened in 1991. It was a Rocketeer or a Rocketeer? Maybe a Rocketeer was 2000. Maybe not Rocketeer was 91. That may have been 91.
Okay, then I take it back. I'm wrong.
There you go. All right. You got the last one. You do the last one.
The last one is a fantastic choice from the 90s. A movie that I actually didn't even see the first time around. Instead, recently saw it and enjoyed it and loved it and treasure it is Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
What a fun, wonderful movie this is. It's like Alan Rickman, Tim Allen, not grunting. Galaxy Quest, great movie, man.
You know what would be great is if they did Galaxy Quest and they somehow fit William Shatner into it.
That would be nice. I'm a little over him.
Did you see The Captains?
No.
It was at the Sci-Fi Marathon that I just went to last week, and they showed a whole bunch of movies from all different eras, and they did The Captains, which is it's more intriguing to watch, but it's too long. It runs too long. But it really shows his attempt to do that. What he loves, that Andy Kaufman kind of humor, where you do things and the audience just doesn't quite know if he's bullshitting him or not.
Right, right.
And because you watch the movie and you're like, oh yeah, no, he's totally in on this joke. He knows what he's doing and this is funny. And then you're like, wait, maybe he's just an egomaniac. No, he has to know. And so he puts stuff in, and it's actually pretty hilarious, but it does run a little bit too long. Because he, like, interviews Avery Brooks, who is insane. He, like, does his entire interview at a piano while he's, like, playing jazz music.
Oh, my God.
It's bizarre.
So, oh, Hollywood, land of broken dreams.
Yes. The finest, the final one is we also have an honorable mention, which was yours, that we pulled off the major list, but we're putting it as an honorable mention.
Right, which is Goodfellas.
Yes.
And I love Scorsese doing this movie. I think it's fantastic. And I think that he's made several films that could almost be considered a sequel. But there's just something about Henry Hill, man, and Ray Liotta playing him. Oh, I've never been able to get past it.
Well, and the writer of it, Nicholas Pileggi, I don't know how to say his name, but the guy who wrote Goodfellas, he did write Casino. So it's sort of this unspoken sequel, but I'd love to see. I think it'd be interesting. But here's the problem with any of these things is, you know what would happen if they said, we're gonna make a sequel to Goodfellas, and like the guy who did School for Scoundrels is gonna direct, and it'll be something really weird, or they'll be like, it's gonna be Todd Phillips and it's gonna star it's going to start Ben Stiller, and it's going to be a comedy.
Yeah. No, they always mess it up.
Yeah. So
instead of an actual sequel.
Channing Tatum.
Oh, God. Well, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of his. But
This is the year of Channing Tatum.
It truly is. Yeah, and I'm into it now. I'm officially into it.
It could have been the year of Brooklyn Decker, but that's not happening.
Nope. Sorry, Brooklyn.
Last weekend was not the year of Brooklyn Decker, and it's also not the year of Taylor Kitsch.
Sorry, city name plus sandwich name in a hot blonde package.
Yeah.
It is not your year. Instead of an official Goodfellas sequel that they will mess up, I will be doing performances in my home where I imitate Sharon Stone in Casino, ripping things out of the closet and pretending I'm leaving my husband.
Oh, awesome. Can I come in and be Joe Pesci?
Yes.
Where I make you almost give me a blowjob? Or you could do something. You could be who is it from Goodfellas? You could just flush cocaine down your toilet all day.
That, I do that anyway.
Thousands of dollars.
I don't have to pretend that.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We left, for those listening on the radio, we left kind of at a cliffhanger. You got to go to the internet and listen to that. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about Men in Black, and we'll find out what Celebrity Gray hates.
Payoff!
Next. We also talked about a bunch of things. We talked about Men in Black, how well that's going to do compared to Avengers, and we talked about a whole bunch of different things. It was actually a relatively coherent, and it didn't derail as much as I kind of wanted it to.
I know, I feel off my game.
I know, it should have been completely raunchy and crazy, but it wasn't. Now, what do we have coming up now, Gray?
Now it's time for the world famous DVD roundup.
Ah, my ah, technology, the future. There it is. All right.
That
curse
was really...
you, iPhone timeout switch.
Where's your Siri now?
I know. Is it raining? Huh. The best part of that, she's looking out the window when she says that.
No, it's not raining. It's angel tears.
Yes, and what? It's because of something you did. Anyway, do you want to start off with your DVD suggestions for this week?
I do. I'm so excited this week because finally on DVD is Harry Potter's foray into Scary Town, which is The Woman in Black.
Scary Town.
Won't Scary you take Town? Me to Scary Town?
That's right.
And the answer is no, I will not, because it's scary.
I like The Woman in Black, and I have to say it's almost better to watch it on home video or DVD or Blu-ray because it was such a long, drawn-out film for atmosphere effect. It wasn't like a boring film, but it's an atmospheric film.
Right.
Everybody starts texting in the movie because you've got people who just have no attention span whatsoever.
Well, I had high school girls screaming behind me in the seats, really? So that really added to my experience. But I loved this movie and actually rewatched it on an airplane recently and really enjoyed it a second time. It's so fun, and it's like old school Hammer horror. Good, good movie.
That's a good one. What's your other one you got there?
My other one is The Secret World of Arrietty, which is this really adorable Disney movie that came out. And it's based on The Borrowers.
Yeah. So which is from 1950.
Right. And the story's been done before, but it's a beautiful 2D film by Studio Ghibli, who just consistently releases beautiful hand-painted work. Really fun female protagonist, cute story, precious in every way, and teeny tiny.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. I love Studio Ghibli. Now, Miyazaki was, what, like a story editor on this?
He did like just a minor role.
Yeah, so it isn't, it still has the charm of Studio Ghibli, and I love The Secret World of Arrietty. I think it's actually the best performing in America. The Studio Ghibli movies don't really do terribly well in America, but they are... but this one did the best compared to Ponyo, which is the most recent Ghibli release. But yeah, it's a beautiful, sweet little story, and it is entirely, even though it's based on an American book, it's entirely... It has that the Japanese culture feel to it, but it also is relatable outside of... just Japanese culture.
Yeah, it makes sense as opposed to Ponyo, which was bonkers.
Ponyo is awesome, though. I love Ponyo.
I loved it, too, but wow, was it out there.
It is bizarre. So there's also a couple other Ghibli releases that are hitting Blu-ray. You've got Castle in the Sky and Whisper of the Heart. I was never a big fan of Whisper of the Heart, but Castle in the Sky is also out there in Blu-ray. A couple more we've got. We've got This Means War, which is the Reese Witherspoon being fought over between Captain Kirk and Bane.
Oh, and it sucks.
It's McGee. So there's Red Tails, which is it's I give it respect for honoring the Tuskegee Airmen, but it is a bit it's cheesy.
my sentiments exactly.
So also Teen Wolf season one, or the complete season one is how they say it on the DVD.
Thank God, I've been waiting. Oh, waiting so long.
We talked about the whole thing about like Chernobyl Diaries. She's like, have you heard of Chernobyl? Meryl Barr, who I do the Idiot Boxers podcast with, when Teen Wolf came out, he was like, oh, I mentioned, oh, it's a remake of Teen Wolf. It's an update of Teen Wolf. And he didn't know that it was a remake of the old movie Teen Wolf, let alone that it was a remake of I Was a Teenage Werewolf with Michael Landon back in the 50s.
Anyone who doesn't know about Michael J. Fox's complete and total filmography should be killed.
There we go.
Now you know my opinion.
There we go. We're gonna do a constitutional amendment.
It's a campaign finance reform. Who cares?
Yes.
Michael J. Fox.
Yes. Michael F. Fox is what I have to say on that. Anyways, there's also the River Season 1 found footage series on ABC that got canceled. There's also Whoops. Sherlock Season 2, which is a great update of the Sherlock Holmes legend and that sort of thing. The stinker of the week is My Babysitter's a Vampire, the first season.
See, that just sounds hot to me.
On the... It's I haven't seen it, I have to admit. I'm putting it as a stinker because the title itself just sounds so horrifying. Anyways, review wrap-up. Men in Black 3, I said it kind of sucks. You said it totally rocks.
Rocks.
Chernobyl Diaries gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. So take that, Chernobyl. Have you ever heard about Chernobyl?
Huh, let me think. I don't know. Is it a mint-flavored gum?
Ooh, that would be delicious. Makes your teeth glow. Anyways, then next week we got Snow White and the Huntsman, Piranha 3DD, and there's also For Greater Glory in Battlefield America, which I won't talk about because I'm not going to say. So, quick 15 seconds. Gray, where are you from? What do you do? Tell us where we can find you.
Check out my podcast on popcornmafia.com and iTunes, and read my reviews over at movies.com, and search on Fandango and watch my Men in Black 3 video because it is totally excellent. It rocks.
Awesome. Talk to you guys next week.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.